Since 2016, our numbers of Mayor's Bread has skyrocketed, unlike the national trend. And this year's Live Full report shows Pennsylvania up over 50%. Why? Our incentives and bonuses are the best in North America. Please visit us at pabread.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Bleeder Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
Sirius XM Sports presents
At the Races with Steve Bick.
Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
Back about 10 minutes past the bottom of the hour. Ed DeRosa joining us here on Twin Spires weekend preview at the races. And Ed can carry that mantle and moniker for another 2 weeks plus. Ed with a major media announcement this week. Congratulations on the move. It seems like a return to your journo roots.
Yes, a lot more content related to horse racing. So excited about that, and I think Mark and his team have weathered some storms on the content front and built a pretty exciting website for racing fans. And couldn't be more thrilled to be a part of it.
Very cool. It'll any time between Breeders' Cup wind down and or are you going to start the literally immediately after Breeders' Cup?
I took Monday off, I guess, just to take that deep breath, and gonna help my mom with some errands, which I would have done anyway post Breeders' Cup. But yeah, looking forward to diving right in on the Tuesday after.
Very good. Well, we'll be anxious. To be honest, I know you more as a pundit style. I used to get Thoroughbred Times. My buddy Phil used to get it, and I frankly would read Phil's.
Phil Kakamizis?
No, different Phil. Phil Melnick. Phil Kakamizis. That's pretty funny. Have you seen Phil at all?
I just saw he celebrated a wedding anniversary with Holly, who worked at Thoroughbred Times. That's part of my guess, but.
Huh. I know.
It's been a while since we've crossed paths in person, for sure.
Yeah, I run into him in the strangest place. I saw him at Los Al one trip. It was the craziest thing. No, my buddy Phil
Racing,
Melnick.
I've always found that, like,
yes,
see people that I live in Louisville or Lexington with and see them more often at racing events.
That's funny. That is true. I've got neighbors here, and I don't see the neighbors literally across the hedge, but I run into them at U-Shack's, the wonderful butcher meat market grocery store in Shushan. I see them there more often than I see them literally in our yard, which is kind of funny. That's and then there's the I've lived here 20 years in Greenwich, and I don't think I know eight people, which is kind of strange, but it just because I'm not I like to think of myself as part of the community, but I'm not.
Of course.
Not active in the community. What do I do in the community? I work in the house for the when I'm here, or I'm out of town. So what? You know, when can I get to know people?
Right.
I should make an effort. I guess. No, I got to make an effort.
Yeah. Bring them banana bread.
Well, no, it's my zucchini bread.
No, that's it. Yeah,
it's the zucchini bread. that's true. That's not a bad idea. I don't know if you heard. You know, speaking of you're funny. You said more racing content. We started the show with Hammer, who's on his way to Kansas City, and I gave him a litany of joints in KC to choose from for his weekend.
That's they had the simulcast conference. Gosh, I'm trying. Tom Lamar was still a blood horse. I was still a Thoroughbred Times. And he and I happened into this Italian place, which, you know, who knows what you're going to get Italian in Kansas City, and it knocked our socks off. So hopefully that augurs well for plenty of good eats, and obviously the barbecue.
Well, the best part, as I tried to explain to Hammer and to anybody that was listening, it's a town that has real. I mean, there's fine dining. Don't get me wrong, and there's a lot of fine dining. But it is a I don't want to call it mundane. But the best things in Kansas City are barbecue, pan fried chicken, burgers, and pork tenderloin. I mean that's the superfecta in KC. As a food service rep, Procter & Gamble. I called on every restaurant in Kansas City, every single restaurant. I mean, I had the city. And at that time, Ed, there were 130 barbecue places on my call sheets.
Just in that area?
130. Just Kansas City. Say from, let's say, you could say from Excelsior Springs down to Martin City, the sort of the northern suburbs, and the southern tip, and then out to Blue Springs, past the stadium, where 70 and 7 intersect, and then into, a little bit into Kansas City, Kansas. Kansas City, Kansas is a little barren, but 130.
Wow. And how long would it, like, what was the rotation to actually get to all those?
It's a good question, actually. I was there from, it's a great question. I was there from September 84 to February of 86 and got promoted and sent to Charlotte, which I did not care for. I liked everywhere I went outside of Charlotte, particularly Savannah, but I hated Charlotte. There's certain places based on volume, the big joints you would see pretty regularly, on the once a month or so rotation. You had a minimum, you were supposed to see 10 accounts a day.
Mm-hmm.
on your sheets. You had this great, I should get one of these again. It was like a piece of plywood, about 16, 18 inches wide and about 12, 14 inches tall, and it had two like knobs attached to the back, and went over it, the knobs would rest on the steering wheel, and it was basically a desk right in front of you, and it had a clip, and you could put things on, you could work right in the car. It was unbelievable. Yeah.
Who made those?
I loved
3M?
It. I don't know what that came from. I should have kept that. Probably had to turn all that stuff in when I moved on. But the experience I had in Kansas City doing the restaurants was spectacular. I mean, it just And I and wasn't limited to obviously to Kansas City. I used to have to go as far north as up to Iowa. I called on Ames and University of Iowa State, and all the way across to Columbia, and down almost to Springfield. Springfield, Jefferson City was about as far south as I went. But then Kansas. I mean, you want every cliche about Kansas is accurate. It's the craziest thing. You would drive like 3 hours and not see anything, and all of a sudden there's a town. There's what was that crazy town where people Ed. I, at the time, I was, so this is 80 whatever, so I was 25, 26. People were wearing sidearms. Junction City, Kansas.
Oh. Yeah.
People were wearing sidearms. I'd never seen it before in my life.
Yeah, that's an eye opener.
Yeah. I got to go there. What's the town where that Eisenhower grew up in? Abilene and Manhattan, the Flint Hills. You know where the Flint Hills are?
No.
The Flint Hills is the region. It's quite something. It's like an American desert, really. Not a desert. That's not fair. It's an arid, plainy thing between Kansas City heading to Wichita. The Flint Hills, and it's different. I loved it. I used to go to Tulsa. I used to have to go to Tulsa. That was great. Unbelievable. Stayed at the. You ever see the movie Tex?
No. Nor have I been to Oklahoma, so I'm envious of the.
Oklahoma's great. My girlfriend's brother had businesses in Enid and Oklahoma City, but I don't know how we got started down this path. But the
Kansas City. Hammer.
Kansas City. There we go. It's all Kansas City reminiscence. But Tulsa. There was a movie with Matt Dillon. Young Matt Dillon was in a movie called Tex, and there's a hotel there that I think it's. I'm pretty sure it's gone. In fact, I know it's gone now. It was called the Camelot. I used to stay at the Camelot. There was Yale Avenue and Harvard Avenue in Tulsa. I've talked to Clark Brewster about it. Tulsa's an interesting town, somewhat problematic town, but historically. But anyway, I had a great experience though. That whatever it was, year and a half plus. St. Joe, Pony Express office, and you get to go to St. Joe. William Drew College.
Oklahoma is definitely on my list.
Go to Oklahoma, Missouri. There's. Do you remember a case? Things are flooding into my head. There was a very famous case, and the reason the name sticks in my head, I think, maybe I have this wrong. I want to say a town called Skidmore, Missouri. Do you remember a case where a rancher was gunned down essentially in the city square, and despite there being 30 witnesses, no one was ever charged? It's a very famous incident.
Well, it was like they didn't like the guy, right?
Yes, he was a bully and a terrible. He had swindled allegedly, and I went to that town. I mean, I think it had happened maybe, I don't know, 6 months or maybe, I don't know, not long. The whole incident was still in the public eye when I used to have to go there.
Mm-hmm.
When I used to pass through there, I had an account or two in Skidmore, Missouri. Unbelievable. I learned a lot doing what I did. That
no, you try. I mean, travel the country is
yeah.
good.
Yeah, it's a big wide world out there, coast to coast. And well, you love to explore. I mean, you're.
I do. Yeah, one of my first calls to the new gig is going to be to Chris Kutulak to figure out how I can get the Fauna.
Attaboy, nice, nice, nice. I got to go. I didn't get the call in Nebraska, but I got to go to Omaha. My buddy Phil that came up earlier. Phil came out to visit me. We went to a Royals game and then we went up to Exarban. And we had just the greatest time. We killed it too. At that time we were in our 20s, and we each made like 200 or 300. For us, that was like, oh my God, we crushed. I should pull out those cards. I should go on newspapers.com and find that day that we went, because I'm sure that I've got the baseball ticket stub, so I'll be able to sort of figure out when it was. And Phil will remember. He remembers everything. But we had this great day at Exarban, and then we went to the Stockyards. No, I doubt it. There was anything but a great day. And then at the time, there were two famous steakhouses, Ross's Roost and Johnny's in the Yards. And we went to Johnny's. And I'm not a huge steak eater, but I had a filet that still makes my mouth water, 40 years later, 35 years later. And I think, it was a filet, probably like 12-ounce filet with, all the trimmings and everything. I think it was like $11. It was some ridiculous $9.50 or something, 84, 85. It was pretty funny. There you go, folks. I've given you everything. My entire existence in Kansas City.
We got the breadbasket tour.
Yeah, you did. You really did.
America's
the rubber chicken.
Exarban is our friend Michael Pod's biggest omission on his list of the many tracks he's been to.
Oh wow! I'm amazed.
Yeah,
that he missed it.
His betrothed has been there, so we always like to throw it in his face. That's one.
Well, I can too now.
That card that he doesn't.
Pretty funny. Well, let's take a survey of the Brisnet Breeders' Cup betting package, because we always do this, and it's always worth letting everybody know what's in it. It's got every possible angle and tool you could possibly want.
Absolutely, and they sort of roll out as the BC info rolls out, but you can get in now, and that gets you signed into the contender PPs, which we update daily with defections, Mishriff being the latest that I saw. But, for me, I'm not looking to, dig into every race and, feel like I've handicapped it and picked a winner. But I do like getting a feel for what might be the competitive races, what might not be. The extreme example would be the Philly and Mare Sprint. Like, you can look at the PPs in 30 seconds and know that that's probably not one you're going to need to worry too much about until they actually draw the race. But others like the turf or the juvenile races, you might want to dig into a few replays at this stage in the game, and I think the contender PPs really help you with that. New this year, Nazrana Dixon, who took over for me, put together, we've done these before for the Triple Crown, she did it for the Breeders' Cup, historical PPs with the charts, so you can really dig in to the type of races that, before maybe produced big prices or just some historical trends with trainers, sires, whatever you're into, being able to actually see all the races in one spot with the results chart to match, invaluable info for those who like to dig in. And then the last thing I'll mention, because the rest is kind of available once they draw the cards, but Kelly Riley is doing her international scouting report. It is included with the package. And Kelly, and I said this the other day here on my way out the door, so to speak, I think one of the most underrated turf writers, turf analysts, however you want to call her, in the game. And if you have not availed yourself to her work, the Brisnet Handicapping Package is a great way to do it, because her international scouting report, to me, one of the most indispensable pieces of information when handicapping the World Championships.
No doubt. The copious work that, I mean, she, it's almost insane how much work she puts into it. That part is, I mean, as a standalone product, it's worth it.
Yeah, when they say no stone unturned, we mean down to the pebble when it comes to the research Kelly does, and not only the research, but also the ability to write about it. And that to me is a longtime turf raider, is where the rubber meets the road, to be able to actually put it in something that the layman can look at and read at his or her leisure and actually figure out what she's trying to say. Not always easy, especially with some of the international class styles and things like that. So very excited to have that as part of the package. It's $25, the whole kit and caboodle. And if you get the package, you also, any other things that aren't included in it, you get 20% off at BruceMed. So really a no-brainer in my mind.
Nice. And, of course, it'll be updated and it morphs as we get closer and closer, as do the pre-entry PPs. Right now, the PPs that you guys give out, right? I mean, the PPs are accessible to anybody.
That's right. Yeah, anyone can get on, and it is the standard ultimate PPs cost. If you don't want the package but want the contender PPs, you can just get those, and then you get the pre-entry PPs when they're updated with the actual pre-entries from Breeders' Cup, and you don't have to buy again. So a couple options at various price points, but again, I see some of the chortling on social media and stuff. Oh, what are you looking this early for? To me, it's not about handicapping the race and picking a winner this far out, but being prepared and knowing, where you might want to need to do extra work, what posts might matter or not. It just helps the process overall, and you're not cramming the day out, so to speak.
Well, and I've made this point more and more in recent years, which is compared to the era when we all grew up with Breeders' Cup and there were seven races and we knew all, let's say, 88 horses that were involved. Now it's not possible. I don't care how how comprehensive you follow the game, both domestically and internationally. We just had Steve Anderson, who's about as efficient and about as far flung in terms of tracking as anybody. But it is very difficult, and that includes even some of the not an obscurity. Chris Davis isn't an obscurity, but I went out of my way to bring Chris Davis on to talk about his two stakes horses that are going to participate in the juvenile, and that. Neither one had a win prepping, but they're both very respectable. And that's not, those are not horses that are going to be top of mind, essentially, especially right. Given how much attention the top contenders get. I mean, in this case, starting with Jack Christopher, that's become to me, the most difficult aspect. I have that sort of almost fruitless attempt every year at Breeders' Cup to make sure we try to mention every horse that's participating, and it's gotten harder and harder. But I always dreaded the idea of coming back Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday after Breeders' Cup and having to discuss some horse whose name never came up. That's the challenge here.
Well, I love that approach for sure, and as you said, it certainly gets harder with the races and the traction from the internationals, which is great. It's the point of the event, but certainly yeoman's work to get to them all. And to your point, I remember my first Breeders' Cup with Thoroughbred Times, and Tom Law said something to the effect of it was Wednesday of Breeders' Cup week, and people talking about handicapping it and this and that, and given what we do throughout the year, he said, if I don't know these horses by now, I'm not going to know I'm looking at the form. So, but that's changed. I mean, we've added, five races since then, and it's just a different style, and the preparation's different because of it.
Ed, take a second, and I'm just looking at the PPs that I printed. So race one in the package is the the Philly Mare Sprint, which is meager. Pick one of the races that you have at hand, and give a quick survey for people that are looking at the summary page for the first time, and when everything, or looking at BrisNet numbers and so forth for the first time. And, you know, a lot of times you and James will say, you know, so and so has the best late race pace figure, etc. Explain some of the key when we get to, particularly to Breeders' Cup. What are the, you know, the prime power category? What are the areas that have been most useful when you look back at the post mortem?
Well, I'll start with the 2-year-old races because we managed to catch a lick last year because of this, and have caught a couple already this year. With Hidden Connection and Rattle and Roll, but the late pace rating for 2-year-olds, if they fired 100 or better in their last start, that's an auto use for me in some fashion. Now, if they're the favorite, then you still have to weigh the price and whether you're willing to take it. Certainly a feather in the cap, but if they're 90-1 like Hot Rod Charlie, it just has to be a part of your wagers, and that's easily seen in the race summary, or you can see it in the running lines as well. So when it comes to 2-year-old racing, that to me is one of the starting points, just in terms of finding out how many horses fit that and how I can most effectively use them. The other thing I would want to point to, especially in the turf races that attract some international competition, is the BrisNet class rating, which I would probably compare most. I mean, they're different, but just the time form style number, where it's more than just, you know, based on final time, and I'm speaking of time form internationally, not time form U.S. But the class rating is definitely a number that just gives you an immediate glance of where a horse who had been racing in Europe fits, both among each other and with this group. And the class ratings in Europe do tend to maybe be inflated a point or two. So, you know, I wouldn't be too concerned if the Americans are running 117 and the Euros come over with 118, for instance. But when you start seeing 2-3 point gaps, that definitely indicates a strong predilection toward, okay, the internationals have the class and maybe the talent of this group. And that's where, you know, I'm just kind of thinking, all right, do I even want an American runner in this type of race? So the class rating to me is definitely huge with the races with the international competition.
Go back to the juvenile, because I pulled out the juvenile figs, the juvenile PP pages to look at this. Is that 100 plus, is that germane to the turf races as well, the juvenile turf races, or just the main track?
No, turf as well.
Wow.
Yep. Yeah, no, it's which I'm going through here. It doesn't look like any filly qualifies. Echo Zulu got a 97 last out, which, you know, isn't quite there. But looking at the others in the group, you know, she's very much in the, you know, among the more likely winner camp. But that, you know, that 100 number, and I'm just scrolling through quickly, and you know, if I saw one in a race where people were inclined to think the Euros were better, you know, that might be an opportunity where he actually, you know, could get some value. But unfortunately, don't see one in the Philly version.
No, there isn't.
Yeah. So, yeah. And that's, you know, part of the allure to the number is you don't see him too often. But I will say Command Performance got it in the Champagne for Todd Pletcher, 107.
Yep. Jack Christopher and Oviatt. Yep.
Yeah, so Giant Game in the maiden race, you know, Dale Romans, he likes to dance. You know, that's a situation that, you know, I look at the speed rating then, and Giant Game isn't anywhere close to what some of the top contenders have run final time speed figure wise. But, you know, I see the 105 and I say, all right, well, you know, that's good enough for third at a big number. That's good enough to spice things up. So Yeah, for me, it's an auto use, especially when you start talking about the bigger prices.
Nice. No, I want. We'll handicap in 2 weeks, but this kind of exercise is always worth touching on, so that people, it's funny. Because you guys always come out first with the package. Same with Derby. I've always have had the information at hand, and so I sort of look at it for. However, whatever period there is until more conventional for me and more typically used PPs come out, which I'm sure you understand. And
of course, I use a ton of stuff, as you know.
Yeah. I absolutely over the years have gotten plenty of clues from the typically as opposed to the. I don't even need to see the full BrisNet PPs. The summary pages to me are really helpful. I mean, with the from top to bottom, and I'll take colored markers and I'll highlight a horse across and at a glance essentially know that that one had strong on prime power and then
right.
Solid on early pace and. Strong on late pace, kind of taking my own average of things, but it has helped identify, contenders and then you go back once you determine what kind of a pace there's going to be in the race, that particularly comes back to help you.
And you're a great use case, for people who say, I grew up on the form or I prefer the form, it's fire you like or whatever it is. Totally get that. Your money, you want to be comfortable with how you gamble it, but that summary page is, to me, a compliment if you use something else. If, you don't want to dig into all the ultimates have to offer or just comfortable with another style, that summary page can still be extremely beneficial, much like, the time form pace projector. Is something I, don't mind taking a peek at. And that, to me, just, supports or, maybe makes me think a little differently about a race I thought I had figured out after going through my, traditional BrisNet survey of a race. But the race summary serves that purpose for people like you and can countless others. And the package is a great way to dip in because you get all the other stuff anyway. So, might as well, even if the PPs you prefer others, there's the summary can still be big time help.
Yeah, agreed. Ed, I appreciate it, and we'll talk more information as we get closer next week, and then, of course, Breeders' Cup week itself.
I got a horse for you in the Mahoning Valley Lid Lifter.
Yeah, go ahead.
Number one, Slick as Ice.
Mahoney
10-1
Valley.
On the morning line. Think it's a super competitive race. Like what happened at Mountaineer last race seemed like a step forward, just missing by a length. Jockey stays aboard. Take a shot at a price.
Let me pull up so I have it and can go reference back to it. Slick as Ice, the one in the first at... Mahoning Valley, which goes off at 12:45.
Yep, mile and the 16th, or mile and 70 yards. Kudos to them for starting the meet in front of the fans.
I love it. Of course, we got Golden Gate starting back today as well as Mahoning Valley. Good job. Ed, anything from Keeneland this weekend?
Haven't dug into the Saturday card enough, but I will say in... The second today, I like Sergeant Barger to upset things. 20-1 on the morning line, turf to dirt. I think the mile configuration can help this one on the surface reswitch. At 20-1 against this group, I've seen worse long shot plays.
Excellent. Ed, thank you so much.
My pleasure. Good talking, and more Breeders' Cup info to come.
Exactly, next week, and of course Monday pre-entries, and Wednesday then everybody's heads will be swimming, and we'll be doing what we do, and we continue to get ready. We're about 10 minutes in and got about 45 or so left. We've got Dave Grenig going to join us now from New York. We'll get Dave's categories as well, his juvenile and filly and mare turf glances as he tracks participants, potential participants. And we just talked quite a bit of juvenile just now with Ed, and I think that'll be as anticipated. It always is, right? The juvenile gets everybody excited because, you know, even though there's been two-year-old stakes and two-year-old, you know, the production of two-year-old stars in the making, the juvenile sort of is the road to the classic season, right? Almost, it really kicks it off and creates a winter derby fave in many cases, as I'm just myself. Now I've lost my... There it is. And there's Dave Grenig of the Daily Racing Form. Good morning.
Steve, how are you?
I'm good. Dave joining us, and lots to talk about in New York. The racing has been really good. We'll take a look at the stakes. In fact, the Carl Place today and the pair tomorrow, the Hill Prince and the Noble Damsel. Then there's a little something on Sunday, the point of entry. But, Dave, first order of business is your Breeders' Cup conversation. Everybody's getting, you know, cup ready 2 weeks from today, and pre-entries on Monday. I think we may have lost Dave. Case? No, pick him up. Yeah, Casey's going to pick him up. And well, actually, that buys me a minute to go to Dave's section at DRF and see if there's been any. Oh, we lost him. All right, Casey, you'll get him back. Here's who Dave's got. Lined up right now. Jack Christopher and Brad Free's got him at 8-5. Corniche 5-2. Command Performance 9-2 as the third choice. That Rattle and Roll, whose name came up earlier this morning for Kenny McPeak, 10-1 out of the Futurity. Pinehurst for Baffert out of Del Mar. Papa Cap for Mark Cassie. Oviat Class 20-1. For DeSormo, American Sanctuary, we talked to Chris Davis, 30-1 Giant Game, also came up this morning. Dale Romans, 30-1, and Tough to Tame. Those are Dave's, that's the other Chris Davis that we talked about with him. And then Dave's also eligibles, as it were, Gunite, Gasper Great, and Jasper Crone. I think Dave is back.
I am here.
There we go. I just I took the time to provide the run through of the juvenile pecking order, and it seems pretty top heavy when it comes to Jack Christopher, Command Performance, and I guess Corniche.
Yeah, I would throw Rattle and Roll in there. I thought his race in the British Futurity was a solid enough performance, and you know, it's going to be jamming in now a third race in a relatively short period of time. But I liked his race. But I don't know what to do with Jack Christopher, to be honest with you, because, and I understand there's been a plethora of timing issues here at Belmont all meet long. I don't necessarily know that the Champagne was one of them, at least not to the dramatic difference that my colleagues have come up with at the forum to make it a 136 and whatever, and give it a 102 buyer. But visually, you know, it was a solid enough performance. I thought the last quarter was just okay. I don't know. I don't know what to do with this horse stretching out around two turns, you know, facing the type of horses that he's going to, you know, facing a Corniche who's got a home, you know, a little bit of a home court advantage out there for Bob. And even Command Performance, that if you get a little bit of a pace, you know, if he can get into it just a little bit more earlier, you know, and still come with that kick, you know, he's going to be pretty strong as well. But I see that David Aragona has Jack Christopher at 8-5, in the juvenile, and I'm not so sure I'm really ready to take that type of price on that one.
Huh. Interesting. And, you know, I had Chris Davis earlier this week because I wanted to shine a little spotlight his way with Tough to Tame and American Sanctuary. You know, among among the other runners, the horses like Oviatt Class and even Papa Cap to some extent, too. You know, there's horses that finished on the board, and all we have to do is look back to, you know, last year to understand that, you know, these are two-year-olds. They're lightly raced, and they can make quantum leaps in terms of level of performance.
Well, the cool thing from last year when you look at Central Quality beating Hot Rod Charlie is that those two are, you know, major players in the Breeders' Cup Classic a year later. And that is pretty cool. And, you know, I think we all knew Central Quality was a talented horse. And 3-1, and I know it sounds like redboarding, but I thought 3-1 was a bit of a gift, to be honest with you, in the juvenile last year. Again, going up against the horse who was brilliant, like Jackie's Warrior, trying to make that transition from one to two turns. And we, you know, where's Jackie's Warrior? He's the favorite for the sprint. I'm not saying Jack Christopher is just going to be a 6-furlong type of horse, but it is a difference, especially with these two-year-olds when they have to do something, you know, a little foreign to them and on a track that they haven't been at before. So, but going back to one of the horses you mentioned there that I know I'm going to use them in to a degree is that American Sanctuary. He's had a couple of trips that have been a little rough, and he's shown the ability to overcome. I like the way he sustained his run in the Futurity. Look, no one was beating Rattle and Roll that day, but he wasn't far off second, and he did not have the smoothest of trips. And I believe I was listening to your interview with Chris, and did he say that Sophie's going to stick with Tough to Tame and Giroux will pick up American Sanctuary? Do I have that right?
Let me go back. I saved that note. It's on my desk here somewhere because for the same reason that you just mentioned.
I think he even wrote in my story what he told you, and I thought he said that on your show. Sappy Doyle will ride Tough to Tame while Florent Giroux has picked up Man American Sanctuary. I'm a little intrigued by A, the choice, and B, Giroux on American Sanctuary. So there's a live long shot, I think. That's a long-winded way of saying I think American Sanctuary is a live long shot in the juvenile to at least get a piece of the pie.
Well, and I'm thrilled to hear you say that because part of my motivation, it was American Sanctuary that I was also taken with, and I realized that, you know, to me, it's one of the really nice stories. Him and certainly Paulo Lobo bringing not one, not two, but three horses to the Breeders' Cup. The point of reference on all of this was the 40% of grade one stakes, you know, being co-opted by only four trainers. It's just such a narrow-minded view of what's out there. And Breeders' Cup is really, you know, this is sort of one of those chances that you see, you know, you see the unusual and the smaller outfits, you know, when they get that good horse and this is their chance. So to me, it's always one of my favorite stories and angles. And then I've got my lone wolf jockey angle, Dave, which is jocks that are there for the weekend or for one day or the other and have only one mount in the Breeders' Cup.
And what's the ROI on that?
I think it's, you know what? Now you're going to make me go work.
I'm not trying to be a jerk about it.
I know. That's a great question, and that's a great question. I think about Willie Martinez and Trini Berg.
Yeah, I mean, look, it's happened. I'm sure there's been a few that, you know, it has popped up to, but I would say that the ROI is probably not strong on that angle. But, look, your overall premise on the thought is correct. You'd like to see a guy like Chris Davis have a good showing at the Breeders' Cup with his three runners, even if they don't win, if they're on the board, or, you know, so that someone can look and say, hey, maybe we should give this guy a shot. He's got 32 horses. Maybe I don't have to go to the guy that has 232 horses, and I can still get a result. And, you know, I think one of them was 75,000 and one of them was 47,000 of the two that are in the juvenile. You know, that's a good, you know, the guy's got a sharp eye and he picked out some horses. Even if they're not going to be necessarily the winners of the juvenile, but these horses could win properly spotted, which he's done so far, can get their money, you know, can make you some money, and potentially even jump up and win a race of importance, and which could lead to something else. So,
exactly.
Yes, your overall premise is I'd like you'd like to see a guy like that have a good showing at the meet.
Who else? Anything else on that on the list that horses we might not know all that well? Dale jumped in with the Giant Game.
Yeah, I'm not sure what the, you know. Dale wants to take a shot. I get it. He was kind of wondering whether he would get in. I think he will. I have Gunite on the list from the mere fact that he's out there. After he ran so poorly in the Champagne, Steve was not of the mindset to run the horse. Gunite has proven to be a very good workmate for Echo Zulu. Obviously, he's more than that in the grand scheme of things, but for this particular setting, he works well with Echo Zulu. They've brought out the best in each other. So I think his primary presence there is to, you know, work and get himself back on track, but to also help Echo Zulu, who's going to be a short price in the juvenile fillies. I think he would only run Gunite in the juvenile if a major name came out. I'm told there are two horses named Jasper coming from Japan, Jasper Great, Jasper Crone. I know nothing about either one other than that one of them is going to run the juvenile, and I need to do more research. I think they're both just one-time winners. Don't know if they belong, don't know if they don't belong. Of the other long shots, their Oviat Class, I thought, ran a respectable third in the Faro. Again, a race that didn't have the necessary pace to make him effective. And there's another guy, Keith DeSormo. He won this race about a decade ago with Texas
right.
Red.
Texas Red.
It'd be nice for him to jump up again and get back in the picture. I know he won a classic with Exaggerator, but you know it's been a little while since we've delved into Keith's horse.
Well, I will tell you, I don't know much about the other Jasper, but Jasper Great I'm familiar with because that's the Arrogate that won at Hanshin and won off by 10 lengths. And it happens to be not just an Arrogate colt, but an Arrogate colt out of Shop Again.
Okay. So American breeding that just happened to find his way over to Japan.
Was a $200,000 Fasig yearling, and is trained by Hideki Mori, who was very active at sales. I'd also tell you, from a pedigree standpoint, a half brother of Power Broker, who you might recall.
Yes, very nice.
And Fierce Boots.
Nice. From a pedigree standpoint, I have no idea what it means when he's going to run against, you know, coming over to a new world and running against a whole new kettle of fish.
True. True. And, of course, Shop Again was Chief, right?
It's a one.
Yeah. There's your juveniles. There's the juvenile look. Dave Grenig with us. And, Dave, your other division. Let's talk about the Philly and Mare Turf. And here it feels like the international set is going to have a lot to say.
Yeah, once we figure out who that international set, what that lineup is going to be comprised of, hasn't been the easiest to get a ton of information out there. Although, you know, I have talked to James Fanshaw several times, and I do get the impression that barring a unforeseen poor workout poor training session over the weekend, that Audaria, who won last year's Philly and Mare Turf at 17-1, is going to come back. She hasn't really, she's 0-4 this year, but she's caught a lot of turf courses that were soft or good to soft, and I do think she prefers turf that has a little bit firmer ground. And she hasn't run poorly. She got beat a Zop by a horse called Grand Glory in the Group One Romane at Deauville in August. Came back, was fourth in the Prix d'Opera against a horse called Rogier, who is supposed to come for Cedric Rossi, a guy who I've not had success getting a hold of. I just remember reading his post-race quotes in the European press saying that he thought this horse's three-year-old filly style would suit America. So I believe she is coming. What else is coming? Joseph O'Brien, I believe, is going to send Thundering Nights, and it's a name that people might remember from the springtime when she was second in the nose by Mean Mary in the New York. And she ran that over a yielding turf course. But again, another one that might want the firmer ground or won't be inhibited by the firmer ground, I should say. It was fifth on the soft ground to Will Gear in the Prix d'Opera. Anytime Joseph O'Brien, just like his father, sends one over there, that's the one sort of question mark I have. Aiden O'Brien, don't know what he's doing yet. I was told to leave three on the list. One of them is like a horse that's 1-for-13, a horse in La Jacquenade. There's Love. I don't know what they're going to do with Love. And then there's Mother Earth, who I think is probably more suited to the mile than she would be the filly in their turf. So I guess we need to find out what he's going to do. There's another Japanese horse called Love's Only You, who is supposed to be pretty talented to come this way. And then Tiona is another three-year-old filly who's fairly lightly raised for Roger Varian, who I believe is going to be pre-entered for this and the turf because of her prowess at a mile and a half. She did win the pre for May against fillies and mares beating Snowfall, who is no longer under consideration for the, who's no longer under consideration for the Breeders' Cup. That was at a mile and a half. She was entered in the arc and then scratched because of the soft ground.
Right.
But she's supposed to come over this way and has run well. Her last two have been solid. Both on what has been listed as good to firm or firm turf for Roger Varian. Looking at the U.S. front, the U.S. top dog is Warlike Goddess, who did have her final local breeze, sort of local breeze. She breezed in Saratoga this morning on the turf course there. 101-3 was the time I was given. And I think Mott had his whole Breeders' Cup contingent on the work tab up there this morning. I believe they are going to ship on Tuesday. And so they will have one opportunity to breeze at Del Mar before the big day.
Chad Brown
is definitely going with my sister Nat, who won the Weya Stakes here. Visually, a solid performance. You know, she's been a little bit of an underachiever, I think, in my view. It was one of her better-looking races, but it was against a lower level of class than she's going to face in this race. And then Pocket Square, he said he was going to pre-enter and take a look. Usually when they pre-enter, they go, unless there's a reason not to. And I guess the only reason not to is if for some reason she would be left off on the list. I think this is a race that could very well oversubscribe, not by much. And I would think that she would either get in or maybe need just one defection. Her race in the Athenia was good. She's got to prove that she can, you know, her grade one races haven't been good. Her less than grade one races have been good. Does she class up to these, and especially trying a mile and 3/8?
Also have going to Vegas for Baltus, who, you know, he's got a solid, very solid resume. And I guess Mandela and LNJ Foxwoods will throw dog tag in. It seems like that's the... There's a couple of... some of the ones that you touched on.
Waiting for a decision. Baltus has another... Oh, I'm sorry. Phil D'Amato, your three-year-old filly, going global. When I was texting with him this week, he said it looked like they were going to try to make a decision today. So, you know, I don't know that that's been made yet. She's got a good resume. She's got a good record. She's won the Del Mar Oaks. She's out there. She's one of those that I think if you're out there, you might as well throw her in and take a look anyway, pre-enter and take a look, and then, you know, go on from there and see how, you know, see exactly which Euros are coming and which ones, and who he might be afraid of.
Filly and mare turf, Breeders' Cup, and with the defending winner targeting, and the juvenile, Dave's categories. And in fact, Dave, one horse that we didn't talk about, though, that you wrote about yesterday, I should slip in, was that Double Thunder with a work in blinkers. You wrote about this yesterday.
Yes.
Gets in. It's going to go.
I think I had a misunderstood Todd before I put my list together earlier in the week. I just thought this horse was not under consideration, but and I sort of revisited it with him this morning because he had a few more workers today for his Breeders' Cup, and he just said, you know, we're going to think about it over the weekend and make a decision, obviously, by Monday, whether to go or not. The work was, to his to his satisfaction. It was an improvement over what he'd seen from the horse before. The horse was a respectable second with a, you know, again, not the easiest of trips in the Breeders' Futurity. Do they go on? You know, it's one of those, another kind of situations where I think if it was in Kentucky or here, you might take a more of a stronger look than if you have to go out west and try a whole new set of circumstances. So I think it's, you know, kind of 50-50 right now whether that horse shows up. But if he does show up, he'll show up with blinkers and, you know, maybe take a step forward off that, you know, with those, with that equipment change.
Well, we've got news flying on the daily and on a regular basis. And, in fact, in the last half hour, Marty McGee via Neil Pessin reporting that Bell's the One, Dave, is going to bypass the Breeders' Cup Filly and Mare Sprint.
Seems like they're all doing it. Bella yeah. Sophia did have a breeze here this morning for the sprint, which actually will be my race, you know, starting next week sometime. It seems like the field is getting smaller and smaller as we go. I mean, I hope for the Breeders' Cup's sake, Gamine stays healthy, because if she doesn't and nobody's out there to enter, it's going to be
tough. Be nuts.
But her presence in the race, just you know, she's just very, very good. She should be, taking a quick glance here, I would imagine she'll be the shortest price favorite in all 13 races, given her brilliance and the lack of competition to face her. But Bella Sophia, I didn't get a chance to see it today. I was on the main training track side, and Rudy works the horse on the main track, so I did not get a chance to see or talk to Rudy about Bella Sophia's breeze today. But, you know, look, she's a three-year-old. She'll be the second choice. Why not take a chance? Especially in a race that's going to be, what, 7 or 8, maybe. You know, get a good piece of the pie, if not the whole thing. And then if I'm them, I'd stay out there and run in the La Brea, where I think she would be a very short favorite, could potentially short price favorite for the grade one out there at Santa Anita Christmas, the day after Christmas.
Well, and Marty reporting that Bell's the One instead will wait another week and participate in the Dream Supreme at Churchill on the 13th, where, you know, she'll be a strong favorite, and it's a $300,000 race. That's a very practical decision.
Absolutely. I'm not going to knock anyone who's doesn't feel like they want to put their horse on a plane to go face Gamine.
Yeah,
and has a viable option. Like, if you're going to be 3 to 5 or a little shorter for $300,000, I can't argue with that.
No, nobody would. Dave, a couple other things that you wrote about this week and yesterday. It's funny. Somebody had asked on my website, what's opening day for Saratoga? And the answer came literally hours later with the layout of the 2022 date calendar.
Yeah, the calendar looks very similar to this year, 202 days, 4 days a week racing. Saratoga, for the record, opens up July 14th, closing day September 5th. Your typical 40 days, over eight weeks, 1 4-day week, 7 or 6 5-day weeks, and your 6-day week to end it with the Monday racing on Labor Day. Just looking at the calendar, one interesting thing, or one noteworthy, there's no racing on Martin Luther King Jr. Day that Monday. In fact, the only Monday racing I see is President's Day on February 21st, Memorial Day on May 30th, and July 4th, which is Monday this year. No Wednesday racing at all, except in Saratoga. And basically everything is 4 days a week with 3 days a week in March. With maybe a 5-day week. I thought I saw 1 5-day week here that I can't locate at the present time. Or maybe it's March. No, that's a 4-day week. So anyway, very similar schedules as to what we had. The other noteworthy thing is, if you're, you know, a hockey fan, you can do a Belmont opening day, mark your calendar for April 28th, Belmont opening day, come to the races, and then go see the Islanders play their last regular season game of the season of the 21-22 season against the defending Stanley Cup champion, Tampa Bay Lightning.
It's getting close, and the building when I was there a couple of weeks ago looked spectacular. It's going to be exciting.
It's a massive construction site here. It's just weird you know, I'm sitting in my seat in the press box, and I'm looking across the way at the 6-furlong pole. And behind the 6-furlong pole for a long, long time when I've been here, it used to be a beautiful tree-lined backstretch. Now I see a newly paved parking lot with all the white lines now for all the cars that will be sitting in traffic for your single-game ticket holders for the Islanders, plus the when they get it finished, the Elmont train station, which is, I can see the part of the platform there. And by the way, speaking of that, if you're planning to come to Belmont Park on Sunday, don't take the Cross Island because you can't. It will be closed. They'll be bringing steel girders that will be put in place for the Elmont train station whenever that is getting ready to open. But you will not be have use access of the Cross Island Parkway to get to Belmont Park. So you'll have to take the back roads. I'm sure I've heard there is a rumor that Jonathan Kinchin will be on the MSG show today driving the on the Belt Parkway on his golf cart showing you the back way to get to Belmont Park.
Oh, that's cute. Using
I'm
the.
Just kidding. I'm just kidding. That's not.
Oh, no, that'd be funny. That actually would be a good shtick. Dave, quick survey of the stakes action. Carl Place today. What a good group. And then tomorrow, that Noble Damsel and the Hill Prince. Really, I'll tell you, the racing has been terrific, averaging 11 horses tomorrow.
Yeah, the weather's held out, allowed them to run some, couple 10-race cards here with a lot of turf stakes. I think, I don't know if I brought this up to you last week or somebody else, but it's, I think we're in a stretch now. 12 of 14 stakes races are on the turf. Nice little group today in the Carl Place, as you said, three-year-old colt. Looking at Easy Time coming off the second in the Franklin Simpson. He was 33-1 that day. Won't be anywhere near that price today. Although a horse that might be a little bit of value who's stepping up for out of a maiden win is Kawaimea River. I just like the way this horse has been training over the turf here, and I think he'll handle the 7-8 for John Terranova. Tomorrow you have Chad Brown, who's won a stakes race all weekend at each of the least one stakes race each of the first 5 or 6 weekends we've had at Belmont, figures to do so again tomorrow. You know, he's won the Neville Damsel, I think, 5 straight years.
Wow.
I don't know that he's going to win it a 6, although Love and Thunder might get the right setup, or maybe they won't. Maybe Tomohiro go to the front and they won't catch her. But I kind of like High Opinion a little bit in that spot, getting back on some, coming back to the mile, getting back to Belmont, where she ran a couple good races previously. The Hill Prince, though, I do think will be Chad's. Public Sector is just getting better and better. Sifting Sands is a horse that, if you're a Chad Brown must bet all the time, you've cashed out big on this horse. 28-1 in an allowance race in Saratoga, 8-1 in a Better Talk Now. The horse has just turned it around from his poor performance in the Woodhaven. I guess people couldn't excuse the one bad effort that day, but he's come around with some good, some solid efforts. I think there's plenty of pace in here, and I guess the interesting horse. A little bit, maybe not from a value standpoint, Soldier Rising has run 2 good races for Christophe Clement, going longer, mile 3/16, mile and a half, now cuts back to the mile and eighth, and of course has been training well, does have to overcome post 11, and does have to try and shorten up a little bit in distance. But I do think Chad will win the Hill Prince. I think the Noble Damsel, his streak might come to an end there.
It's a terrific card, and compelling big fields just on a daily basis. Good maiden racing as well. And next Saturday we've got Showcase, right? New York Showcase,
American Revolution. I think is that the Todd, who was third in the Pennsylvania Derby, will probably be your headliner. I know that. I guess Mr. Buff will give it another shot, but I think he's on the other side of midnight, as your good friend Marty McGee would say, our good friend Marty McGee would say. And I think American Revolution is potentially New York bred on the rise. I like him going into the Pennsylvania Derby to have an impact, and he was third. Then I guess we'll get the same kind of groups for the Ticonderoga and the Mohawk. And we'll see some two-year-olds, some sprinters, and then we close it out. Well, we don't close it out. Next Sunday is not closing day. We have 5 stakes, including the Bold Ruler, next Sunday. But we are staying here an extra week. the opening day of Aqueduct was supposed to coincide with the Breeders' Cup. It is not. I think that's because they are not, or at least they were not, equipped to set up Aqueduct with fans that weekend. But I'm hearing that there might be an announcement that fans will indeed be allowed to show up at Aqueduct when we do get started on the following week. So,
okay,
for that announcement, I think we might hear something on that next week for official. But no, we still got a few more weeks here at Belmont, and look, we've run 111 turf races with 12 more to go this weekend that will be uninterrupted, and then maybe we might have to deal with a little bit of weather next week. But this has been some fall for the weather in the weather department, and it's really allowed Nyer to, you know, to roll out all this grass racing, which is what people like.
No doubt, and the fields have been great, and looks like we'll finish strong. Dave, when are you leaving for Del Mar?
I'm leaving a week from today.
Okay, all right.
I'll be on the grounds next Saturday. The question is, will I be on the grounds at Del Mar or San Anita? That's to be determined in terms of where I'm needed to be to watch
workouts
that I need to see work. So
absolutely.
But more than likely, I'll be at Del Mar on Saturday. And maybe potentially I'll try and leave in the middle of the night and get to San Anita on Sunday.
Wow. All right. I get in Saturday, and so I will see you soon enough, Sunday or somewhere along that line. Excellent. Dave, thank you. This was great.
You got it, Steve, and I'm sure we'll talk soon enough.
Absolutely. Dave Grenig, everybody. DRF Grenig covering, and as he mentioned, he's going to take over the Philly Mare Sprint because Marty's not coming out this year. So Marty's races. You doing both of Marty's races or just the one? I guess Dave's gone. All right. I'll find out about that because I always use the guys. I think that's Bobby Shoemaker in the background. Shoe.
Hey, buddy. How are you?
I'm good. Haven't talked in a couple of weeks. You've been hitting?
Yep. Been
banging.
Everything's been going good. First of all, before I give you my picks, I want to congratulate my guy, Scotty McKeever, on his VCBC qualification yesterday.
Saw that.
Once again, proving that the Equine Edge platform is as good as it gets.
I saw that. And in fact, he fleshed it out that, essentially, he took about 15 minutes to put the picks in. It was a pick and pray. And he rifled through the way he showed us at Vegas and, put his picks together and then came home and later on and saw the result and ended up finishing second and being one of the two recipients of a $10,000 BCBC seat.
Hey, not a bad way to come home, right, Steve?
No, not at all. If anybody didn't see it and listen to it, that was one of the most enlightening things that came out of NHC.
Yeah, absolutely. So I won't take up too much of your time, Steve. I want to go to Saturday. I'm going to focus both of my attentions on Keeneland. Let's start with Keeneland Race 7. I like the 4, Steve. He's my honey badger. I thought the horse was best last time out after breaking a step slow. Made the solid run, rounding the far turn. Ended up finishing second. I believe if he doesn't break poorly that day, he wins, Steve. In the race prior to that, I thought he was visually impressive at Ellis. And I believe this horse is ready to run his best race yet. And there's not many times you're going to get Brad Cox and Fallon Giroux at 6-1. So that's my pick in Race 7, the 4. He's my honey badger.
Well, it's funny. We talked about this a couple different times this morning with Marty and as well as with Nick. And he thinks Pipeline is a big lean and that the Pipeline will take plenty of money. Soup and Sandwich is going to take money. So that number on He's My Honey Badger should hold up, although the horse does have a following. There's people who seem to gravitate to him.
No, I agree with that, and I certainly am one of the followers, but I can't get past that last race. I watched the replay before getting on the show with you this morning 3 times. I just think he was much the best. I mean, he was 9 lengths back at one time and loses by 2 3/4 lengths, and the PP say step slow. I mean, to me, he broke on his face almost. So I'll take those odds every day of the week and just bet the horse across the board.
Nice. He's my honey badger, the Daredevil Colt, for Steve Landers and for Brad, and Giroux gets back on board. And in fact, Giroux broke his maiden. Giroux has ridden him as much as anybody. This will be his fourth. Yep. Bachizza had him. Adam Bachizza has ridden him to two wins as well. This is a horse that fires way more often than not. And
absolutely.
Yeah. Good job. Yep.
So we'll go to Keeneland Race 9, the Raven Run, one of my favorite races of the year. I don't want to butcher this name, Steve, but is it Zane a la Rob, the 9 horse at 6-1 for Chad Brown and Johnny V? Is that the way you pronounce the name of that horse?
Seems like Zane it. It seems like Rob. It. Yeah, Zane a la Rob.
Yeah. Okay. So anyway, second off the layoff, ran the fastest speed figure of her life last time out. I understand that this is a big hiking class, but Steve, I've been watching this game for a long time, and I think she may be special. And I don't feel like Chad would put her in this spot if he didn't think she had a big shot. And Johnny B certainly wouldn't see fit for it. He did do his homework on this filly. I think she gets pace to run into, and I think she's ready to run the best race of her life. And once again, I'll go back to what I said about Brad Cox and Florent Giroux at 6-1. How many times are you going to get Chad Brown and Johnny B at 6-1? I think that's value. Second off the layoff again, I think she's ready to pop.
Hey, your point about running her in a spot like this makes a lot of sense. And frankly, being that she's a Shadwell purchase, $1 million Shadwell purchase, this is an important opportunity for her. You won't know if this is a Shadwell that's going to end up popped into a sale. I would imagine that if she gets black type tomorrow, that you'll see her on Night of Stars, they'll turn around and try to get strike while the iron's hot with her. But I agree. I don't think Chad, throws her in here. The interesting thing about it, this is obviously a horse that's ouchy, that's had some issues. You don't have three starts with interrupted lines, September, April, and August. You don't run three times in a calendar year. If you're sound. However, look at the string of works. She has been out like a metronome every 7 days for 2 months. So
and when I see Chad C do that every 7 days, it's just methodical. And that's where he's so good. And I think he has a ton of confidence in this horse. And you're right, the soundness is certainly a concern, but She's 2 of 3, and she had an extreme excuse April 30th at Churchill Downs 113 days ago, and then she came back like a vengeance to me. And I know you're not a big visually impressive guy because you mentioned that at the NHC, but this horse wouldn't even switch leads off of that long of a layoff, and she crushed that field. And again, it's a big hike, but I liked a lot what I see in this horse. And again, the Johnny B thing, Steve, for me is really the solidifier there. He does not get on horses like this unless he thinks these kind of horses can win this race. And 6-1 on this horse, I think, is tremendous value. And we've talked about this before. You know I love second off the layoff.
No, there's a lot to like. And the fact that Johnny does not ride a lot for Chad. There's something at work here. Now, at the same time, I mean, it's a big full field, and who knows? Maybe Chad called looking for to see if Rosario was available from Ron, and he said no, but he's going to stay in New York. But Johnny's available, and so it could have been. Who knows? That'd be a fun story. We'll try to get an answer on that. But two 6-1 shots, Shu, and both seem very live.
Yeah, thank you very much. And last thing I'll say, Steve, because I know you're going to have a busy schedule the next couple of weeks before Breeders' Cup, but I was looking at the Classic today and these pre-entries. This is one of the best Classics I've seen in a long time. And I'm a big Medina Spirit fan, as you know, but I have no idea. I'm going to have to do a lot of studying on that race. That race looks like it is primed to be one of the best we've seen in quite some time.
Yeah, everything's pointing. I mean, frankly, as we go through these divisions these last 2 weeks, it's not exactly dotted with star power, but the classic you know, whatever is lacking, throughout the 2 days is going to be more than made up for in the Classic.
Yeah, it's going to be more than made up for. It's the ninth inning grand slam home run and a 3-2 count. That's what I like.
I love it.
All right, buddy. Well, look, I appreciate the opportunity. Always love to be on with you, Steve. And if we get a chance to talk before Breeders' Cup, that's
without
great.
Fail.
If not, and I'll be texting you, buddy.
Absolutely, we will.
All right, buddy. All right.
Thanks, Bobby. Care. Bobby Shoemaker, right. Everybody. Shoe to turn, the number two, turn Turf Races on your Twitter. Part of the Who Dat team. Papo is standing by, and we got to revisit for 2 seconds, Papo, before we get a couple of plays. We have to recap from Wednesday, where Form to Win was just right about everything in that sequence at Keeneland.
Yeah, Steve, it was a profitable sequence to get started. You know, get the sequence started off with the nice prize horse. But I know I texted you prematurely going into the nightcap. I thought it was going to be a super day in terms of the pick five and things like that. And it did not have the last horse, but it had all the other horses, even for the time invested, which wasn't a lot on my side. It was a profitable sequence, even though I couldn't put the multi-race bets together.
The Hope and Dignity call was really strong, and to start out the $20 and the nightcap there was that we've said before, you're not going to get a tremendous amount of insight when it comes to maiden races. It just doesn't work because there isn't enough to go by. So the form part of Form to Win is really key. So you got to do your own, some of your own pedigree work on the maiden stuff. But that Hope and Dignity, I botched it. That was a mistake on my part to not have it as a B. I had it as a C. I was live to that horse of Cara Toys. That just was grinding away, and then Colby Hernandez's brother comes along and beats us. That was tough because that was real money. How about today, tomorrow? What do you got?
Today, just some prices to throw out in that Sycamore Stakes at Keeneland, which is race day, 12 furlongs on the turf. Form to Win liked the number two at Journey to Freedom, who's 8-1 on the morning line. Spooky Channel, who's also 8-1 on the morning line. That's the six horse. And then the five horse is a price at 15-1. Yamato, who I believe is coming off an allowance win at Kentucky Downs, and that form holds up. So those are some price horses for today, Steve. And then just continuing on to Keeneland tomorrow in the Perryville Stakes. It had him ranked Soup and Sandwich at 3-1, followed by the nine horse Runaway Magic at 12-1, and then Pipeline. Pipeline also fit at 4-1, and then race nine tomorrow, the Lexus Raven Run. The 11 horse Miss Speedy at 6-1 was the top ranked horse on Form to Win, followed by Super Sensational, and then a bomb maybe to throw in on the Deep Exotics is the four horse Minute Wolf at 30-1, who fits with a good data set too. See, five starts with the filter that I ran, and she absolutely fits. I mean, maybe not good enough for the top spot, but that could spice up the exotics a bit.
I'm a little surprised that Soup is, especially after we, after what we talked earlier this week about the recency element, and the fact that. He's been gone since Derby, but maybe the getting back to the one turn elevates him a little bit.
Yeah, and that was only one start. I mean, I did put it in for the 50 weeks, but that one start was good enough to put him in the mix there.
Interesting.
I mean, the recency thing is I'm using 50 weeks now. So it did pick up that one start that he had a couple of months ago, but that seems to be a good angle. Just primarily looking at form this year, I could, in the big scheme of things, I don't care what the horse did last year or when we're looking at huge data sets, that's the further you get away from the current start, I think the data is a little bit diluted. You don't know if the horse is really in form right now.
Well, exactly. And that's one of the reasons that the venues where the horses are, you know, we brought this up about Presque Isle and, well, certainly Hong Kong. We've got our friends that are using Form to Win attacking Hong Kong and anything in Australasia, too, if you use the other flip side. But the more formful the horses, the more often that they're running, the more accurate and helpful this is. It's amazing. I mean, sometimes, you know, you obviously, you know, when you're giving away, that's a natural, you're giving away currency, you're giving away, you know, current form, that's always harder on a horse. But then there's also, you know, there's also plenty of guys, and I would say there's plenty of preference on that when it comes to sprint. You know, horses sprinting off a layoff, you can take a longer layoff off a sprint than you can off of a route goer. So that's one reason why I know people are all lining up to be against Soup and Sandwich tomorrow, but I would imagine he runs well. Form to Win, download it. 2 free races a day. Play around with it. Papo and I recap early in the week and then come back and, you know, give you ideas that we're seeing and post them up on our Twitter feeds as well. Papo, good luck this week.
Yeah, thank you, Steve. You have a good weekend.
Papo Morales, everybody. Form to Win. What a fun morning. Papo and Shu and Dave Grenig, Ed DeRosa and Nick. Steve Anderson caught up with Steve and Marty McGee, of course, and Hammer on his way to KCMO. We're on our way to Rochester to see the baby. I'll put up today's late pick 5 at Belmont right now in a little bit. Give me an hour, maybe, and I will talk to you on Monday. Good luck, everybody.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
There's a great story to tell in Pennsylvania. Only 3 states have produced more Breeders' Cup champions, and no state can match our performance in recent years. Since 2016, our numbers of mares bred has skyrocketed, unlike the national trend. And this year's live foal report shows Pennsylvania up over 50%. Why? Our incentives and bonuses are the best in North America. Please visit us at pabred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, 3-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Bleeder Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-9 3-8-4-6-4-3.